Before we officially start, I must give a special shout out to the boys over at Recovery. Much like myself and the lads, Chris and Ian are a couple of rugby fanatics like we all are, and they've created various products with recovery in mind based around natural CBD remedies. Head over to their Instagram page or website and use the code FREEBLOKES, that's the number three followed by blokes, for 10% off all their natural products and feel the benefit today.
Good afternoon, good morning and good evening from wherever you are listening from. My name is Jamie Robinson and welcome to episode 69 of Three Blokes and a Rugby League podcast. It is my pleasure to welcome J.D. Moss-Goddard and Callum Wood to the show today as we cover round 8 of the NRL and brief over round 5 of the Super League. Welcome to the podcast, lads. Let's dive right in. The Thursday night game, Canberra Raiders 20, South Sydney Bunnies 34. Another blistering night for the Thursday night game. It seems like it's one of the main games of the weekend every single week. What a start. The Bunnies overturning a deficit for the second week running and making it 7 wins on the spin. You saw this one for us, Woody. What did you think, mate?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm very relieved to be invited back for a second week. So, time to crack on. You mentioned the deficit there. It was only 2 points at halftime, but it was another decent comeback from the Bunnies. It was a tough start to the game for the Raiders. And they've got a few players out in anyway, but it got even worse when George Williams pulled out in the warm-up, which caused a lot of disruption to them. Elliot Whitehead had to fill in for him. Hudson Young came into the starting team as well. And it worked to a bit of an extent in the first period, but it really showed that the weight of the world was on Whitehead's shoulders in the second half, and it proved far too much in the end. Tom Starling had a bit of a bright spot early on and looked really promising in the first half hour, but he faded away badly in the end, as did the likes of Elliot. Whiten touched the ball 59 times in comparison to Whitehead only touching it 18. And like I said, most of those probably were in the first 20 to 30 minutes. Set completions and run meters were almost exactly the same. I think time in possession was really the deciding factor in this one. Bunnies had the ball for just over half an hour and Raiders with 24. You know, 6.5 minutes difference was massive in the end. Raiders also gave up 8 penalties compared to 1 for the Bunnies, whereas set restarts, I think, was 7-0 to the Bunnies. Whiten was really unlucky with 2 disallowed tries late on, which potentially contentious, but if one of those got given, it would have made for a really nervy finish. But, you know, Rabbits with a 14-points advantage in the end. I think what's constantly impressive about the Bunnies is how obscenely well that left-hand edge is working. I mean, Reynolds and Marshall completely bossed proceedings all game again. Walker was jumping in as the third man and creating a lot of space at will as well. Reynolds especially this week, whereas kind of Marshall was the main man last week. He was in complete control throughout. Just a massive shame that he's going to spend a few weeks out now, possibly looking at somewhere between 4 and 6 weeks of that thumb injury. His passing and defence was flawless. Kicked 7 out of 7 off the tee, including 3 or 4 off that left-hand touchline, which he's got an awesome record from this season. And Benji as well, like I say, is ridiculous again, pulling the strings like a puppet master, even if late on for one of those white and disallowed tries, he did pull the wool over the referee's eyes a little bit, getting trapped accidentally on purpose. But I think that's probably a further reflection of his experience and nous, really. Bunny's only missed 12 tackles across the game, which is hugely impressive, along with that awesome attack. And I think that's part of the reason the Raiders became frustrated in the end and really struggled to break the game open. They had a lack of attacking options. Back rowers for Bunnies were hugely impressive again. Chloe Matangi, who we're speaking about every single week as one of the best players in kind of every game he's involved in, and Jaden Sewer as well, made a huge difference. And Chloe Matangi broke through to set up Sewer for what was probably the game's crucial try in the end. Chloe Matangi, 138 run meters, 2 tackle breaks, a line break, the try assist, which I mentioned, 38 tackles. And then so it was 167 run meters, 1 tackle break and 28 tackles. So, you know, that sort of output from those two was absolutely huge. They're so aggressive in attack and defence. They're making dents in the Raiders throughout the game. And Sewer played a full 80 as well. Chloe Matangi was on for the majority. For Bunnies, this is the most points they've ever scored through 8 rounds, which, again, is a massive reflection on just how well that attack's ticking. And Raiders have now slipped outside the top 8, which is really surprising at this stage of the season, though we touched on that last week. Was going to speak about where Luttrell was going to fit in coming back into the side, but I mean, there's a few injuries now, so potentially he probably does come straight back into fullback. But I was going to kind of ask, when everyone is fit, who kind of drops out or where does he slot in? You know, does Benji potentially drop onto the interchange and make an impact from there? Is there a case for Latrell maybe being moved back into centre, which I don't think he'd be too happy with? But I guess kind of what are your thoughts on that if everyone is fit? And also, how are they going to deal with this massive injury they picked up this weekend?
Yeah, but they have said he might not need surgery anymore. So I think he could. There's been rumours that he's going to be coming back next week, which is ridiculous. But I reckon he'll look at 2 or 3 weeks. I think Latrell will throw right back in at fullback, mate. Yeah, but in terms of the kicking, I'm not sure. I think Latrell does kick, Jed. Is that right? He's kicked for the Roosters before, I believe.
Yeah, with the Roosters' primary goal kicker, he's got a really good boot on him, so I would presume that he will just be overtaking that, no worries, and as he's pretty reliable as opposed to some of the other teams in the NRL we've seen who don't even have a first-choice kicker, it seems, at the moment. But yeah, he will slot back in, and even if he doesn't, he goes into the centre, you've got Alex Johnson who can easily deputise at fullback, so quite lucky to be blessed in a lot of positions he seems to be missing at the moment. Just coming on to the forwards, though, Ryan James, 23 minutes, Sevier Havili, 28 minutes, Tarpany, 32 minutes, Horsberg, 42 minutes. I mean, we've seen Tarpany's wife publicly criticise Sticky this week, which, I mean, fair enough if you've got disgruntlement we've had with the coach's decision, but that, for me, shows that it's an unhappy camp in Canberra. But Jamie, what is he playing at? I mean, why is he not playing these blokes for bigger minutes? And even to be dropping, I know Papa's not exactly setting the world alight, but he's still one of the best front rowers in the world, regardless of his off form. Dropping him and then weird minutes for all these other forwards. What's Sticky doing?
It's falling to pieces, isn't it, mate? Absolutely falling to pieces. I think when you don't trust your forward pack like that to do big minutes for you, whether you don't think they're fit enough, whether you don't think the effort's there, obviously, Papa's going to have a couple of weeks off. He's come out himself and says that rugby league isn't his first thought at the minute, so unless there's something going on behind the scenes with him. But Sticky just don't seem to have any confidence. You know, at the start of the season, Tarpany and James were two of the most brutal forwards going. Corey Osberg has got a good record for them. Sivi Havili is a workhorse regardless whether he's at hooker or 13, but... You know, Joseph Tarpany ended last year as one of the best loose forwards in the world, and only giving him 32 minutes when he's fresh, especially in a World Cup year as well for New Zealand, is definitely a problem. Especially looking at the fact that Tarpany and Havili had the highest involvement rate percentage of the entire round in round 8 in the NRL. That's courtesy of Rugby League Eye Test off Twitter, who's very good with his statistics. You know, basically, in a sense, that whenever Tarpany and Havili were on the field, which was 32 and 28 minutes, respectively, they were either doing a run, they were even making a tackle, they were either involved in play for, I think, about 25% of the time, which is ridiculous, and it shows that they want to have that hard graft. So, yeah, there's somewhat going on at the Canberra Raiders at the minute. Obviously, they've had a tough game last week against the Bunnies, but it's probably not going to get any easier in the NRL. Just looking briefly, very briefly, at the injuries. Like we said, Adam Reynolds had an injury on his thumb. He's looking at potentially 3 to 4 weeks off, and some big, big injuries for the Rabbits there. Campbell Graham, 4 weeks looking out. Jackson Paulo, 6 to 8 weeks, both with fractured hands. Cameron Murray and Sebastian Chris from the Raiders have had a syndesmotic ankle sprain as well, likely looking at 4 to 5 weeks. Big, big losses for the Bunnies there. Woody, very quickly, mate. Colm Atangi, 5 points. Adam Reynolds, 4. Jaden Sewer, 3. Benji Marshall, 2. Cody Walker, 1. 5 very big players there for the Bunnies. Anybody else that you thought was had an honourable mention there?
I think Jack White was probably unlucky maybe not to pick up a point or two, but maybe if one of those tries got allowed at the end, but he was the main raider in contention. But yeah, those 5 really had massive impacts for the Bunnies.
Excellent, mate. Two teams that we thought would be up there this year, but it looks like it's going to be a tough old slog for Raiders this year, especially. Coming on to the next game, Jed, Melbourne Storm 40, Cronulla Sutherland Sharks 14, two very different halves of rugby league, and kind of another example of the 2021 NRL season where top teams can be competed with for the first 40 minutes, but it just seems to die out in the second half.
Yeah, it definitely does. And of course, this is a rematch of the 2016 Grand Final, of course. And there's been Melbourne have pretty much stayed at that trajectory while the Cronulla Sutherland Sharks seem to be continually now heading in the opposite direction, unfortunately. But I mean, Cronulla, up until half-time, they were leading 8-6 and they were doing absolutely everything that you need to do to try and get a result against Melbourne. I mean, these two have kind of a weird rivalry for some reason. It's one of them rivalries that you can't really explain. There's no geographical, there's no sort of players that have come into contact, but it just seems to always be a good slog. And it seemed to be going in that kind of pace again, but I mean, they were up in the faces. They were making Melbourne second guess, which Melbourne never do. They had more possession, better completion, less missed tackles. And it was. But and then when we got into the second half, it was just one-way traffic. It's like they thought the game was won at half-time. And you can never take your foot off the gas against Melbourne, because what they did to Cronulla is what they'll do to every single team in the league, regardless of how good you are. If you take your foot off the gas against Melbourne, they're going to punish you. And that's what they did to Cronulla. I mean, the Sharks struggled with the pace of the edges from Melbourne, a collective 20 missed tackles from the Sharks' back line, 1-7. And it just proved that Ado Carr had an absolute field day. And I don't feel like I've seen him in as much open space this year. And it was great to see him in open space again and just be reminded of how talented he is and how good he can be. 10 Storm players made 100-plus metres in the game, which shows how dominant they were in attack and running. Jerome Hughes has continued his absolute unbelievable form at the minute, and he's one of my favourite players at the moment. He keeps the Storm ticking in every regard, and he's someone that Craig Bellamy can rely on in every single game, and we know how Bellamy likes them type of players. For me, I know I mentioned it to you boys previously, but he's the second best scrum half in the competition behind Nathan Cleary this season. His new direct running game that he's implemented into his game this season, it seems to be working wonders at the minute, and I don't know if it's that the teams aren't used to that side of Jerome Hughes, but he seems to catch him off guard every single time, and he always seems to make a break and a tackle bust. And right now, at this moment, he absolutely walks into that seven slot for the New Zealand Warriors. Obviously, Sean Johnson, I presume, will have something to say about that now he's come back from injury. But obviously, it was a battle between them in this game, but there was only one winner, and that was Jerome Hughes. The Sharks, they're a team of misfits at the moment. Players playing out of position, blokes coming back from injuries, and the blokes getting injured again, guys out of form. But the two Sharks for me that are standing up every week is Connor Tracy and T. Wilton. And the both of them players are playing out of position. I think in the last four weeks, Connor Tracy's played three different positions for the full 80 minutes. And then coming off the bench as well for one of the other weeks. And it's when you've got players like that who are still fronting up every week, but they're not in a set position, you're not going to get the best out of them, because they're not having any time to get any structure and consistency within the game. And you could describe that as Cronulla Sharks overall. That first 40 minutes, they were very structured, but then you saw that slip away and you saw the result come away from them. Sean Johnston slowly getting back into the swing of things was very good in the first half, but unfortunately was absolutely non-existent in the second half. It was great to see the late switch and Harry Grant getting a start at the last minute. He played 68 minutes, achieved 3 try assists, 3 line break assists, and made 10 dummy half runs, but equally made 85 passes from 93 touches of the ball. I know it's something that you've touched on quite a lot, but his delivery is absolutely exquisite and arguably the best in the competition. Very much like Cameron Smith, his predecessor before him. It hits its mark every single time, and you know that you can rely on him to give you a good ball to start the attack. And his size and stature may become an issue against the bigger and stronger teams. He got bumped off twice by Brandon Hamlin, ULA, quite abruptly as well, sent him back on his backside. But with a player of his talent, I presume he will work on that aspect of the game, and it shouldn't become too much of an issue. We saw that happen to Jonathan Thurston throughout his career, and he still went on to be one of the greatest players of all time. So hopefully Harry Grant will sort of carry that on. Christian Welch, faultless again. Best prop in the world for me at the moment, probably at I know you two might disagree. I know you're a big fan of James Fisher-Rice, but for me personally, Christian Welch is the best front rower in the game. 55 minutes managed here, 208 run meters from 21 runs, 3 tackle breaks, 2 offloads, and 18 tackles. Out of 18, didn't miss a single one. 10 out of 10 effort every single week from him. Both teams had the ball for exactly 25 minutes, 33 seconds, which is crazy when you consider their absolute disparity in the score. But then you look at the completion of 85% against 66% in the it tells the story of the game. 15 dummy passes from Cameron Munster. It's a part of his game that we're all quite familiar with. Sometimes I would like him to give it a little bit more, but unfortunately that is his aspect of the game, and that's why he's been so successful for so long. Jamie, I'm just going to throw this to you because I know we spoke about it last week and we were a bit confused about it ourselves, but why do you think Cronulla have brought in Will Chambers? What does that bring to the Cronulla side that they potentially don't have already?
Don't know, mate. It really confused me, did this signing. It's, they must have got him on a cut deal because, I mean, if you're signing Will Chambers from Melbourne, he's probably not going to come for a cheap deal. But because he's coming from a rugby union setting, he's probably wanting to just get back into rugby league. But, you know, I appreciate they've got a few injuries, but they've got good depth in the centre. Obviously, Jesse Ramian, Josh Dugan, Teague Wilton can fill in there. Connor Tracy can do a job. They've got Hiroti, Mulitalo and Katoru can also cover from the wing. Obviously, experience plays a big part of that, and he's played in grand finals, played in Origins and whatnot as well. But the Sharks are probably one team that aren't lacking in any experience. They've got some big players there. I appreciate the likes of Dugan are probably going to leave at the end of the season, but I think James is on the side until the end of the season too. So, not entirely sure, mate. I think it's a bit of a question mark signing for me. I'm not too sure what you think.
I don't know. I mean, it was nice from sort of a poetic kind of aspect that he came in for his first game against Melbourne Storm, but no, I didn't see anything in this game to make me think of why the potentially signed him. But I don't know, maybe it might prove to be a masterstroke, but unfortunately I don't think it will be that as such. Gentle nods as well to George Jennings and Rima Smith, who are up there for the signers of the season at the moment. I know you're a big fan of Isaiah Papali'i, but how do you think them two rank quickly among the signers of the season?
Yeah, I think they have to be right up there, especially Raymond Smith. Like you said, the last few weeks, he's not just been the standout centre, he's been one of the standout players across the whole division. So I think George Jennings is a smart pickup as well. I know he's looked decent in spells before, but getting a bit of a consistent run should work wonders for him. And he picked up an injury at the weekend, which might not help him. But yeah, a decent run of games, now they'll get the best out of him.
Yeah, definitely agree there. And just to touch on the injuries, Braden Hamlin-Uele, another with a syndesmotic ankle strain, has been quite a few this round, and he's now looking at 8 weeks out. They need him back as quickly as possible, really, because he's one of their better forwards. Just to go through my player of the season points, Jerome Hughes, I give him the 5. Harry Grant, unlucky with the 4. It could have gone to either one of them, but I was really impressed with Hughes. Christian Welch, 3. Nico Hines deputising very well for Papenhuyzen, involved with a lot of aspects of the game too. And Connor Tracy, who, as I mentioned, has been ever impressive this season with the 1 point. Coming on to the next game, I think we'll all be in agreement here. The game of the round, although none of us would have predicted it. I didn't predict it in my preview. The Brisbane Broncos, 36. The Gold Coast Titans, 28. I mean, I'll just hand it over. Was it Woody, did you cover this game, mate? Oh, is it Jamie? I do apologise. Jamie, but you were in for an absolute treat here, and I'll just hand it over to you, mate.
Yes, thank you very much. An absolute barn burner of a game. It seems like Gold Coast are involved in a lot of these type of games at the minute. High scoring points for and against, and especially against the near rivals in Brisbane. I mean, I've watched a lot of rugby in my time. I've been a fan for over 20 years, played it for however long. But I don't think I've ever seen a game start quite like this. You know, it was 22-22 by the half an hour mark. Brisbane started off like a sixth tier amateur rugby league side. Some absolutely embarrassing efforts, really, and quick thinking attack from the Titans put them up 22-0 in 15 minutes. But then, like, the backline of Brisbane just woke up suddenly and pulled it back within the half an hour mark. It was just like, I almost compared it to like you were playing a games console against someone who wasn't even there, who'd gone to the toilet, and you were just running through them without making any effort at all. You know, and if you wanted to get a neutral into rugby league, you'd recommend watching the Titans this year, especially. I mean, kind of breaking this down, looking in the first half, especially Jamal Fogarty was excellent, and I know he's a player that is, I think, a lot of the traditional rugby league fans really, really like. It was superb in the first half. He took total control of that attacking floor. Used the running game of AJ Brimson and Tyrone Peachey perfectly. He dictated play. He spotted the gaps. He used the numbers on each side perfectly. Kind of strategically placed Brimson and Peachey, and just brought gaps like it was in the back garden. Fogarty, he dictates play really well. And he points people in the right direction. I imagine he's one of them halves that you play with that never shuts up in attack as well, which is perfect. We've all played with them type of players, and it's what you need, especially in the NRL, and especially when you've got someone like Ash Taylor beside you, who, in my opinion, continues to go missing. And in a similar fashion to Anthony Milford, I'm not sure where the Titans go with this now. I think he's basically played himself out of a contract extension. He won't be playing for the Titans next year, I don't imagine. When he's on, but that's maybe one game eight or nine. He's not really up to the scratch anymore, and he looks scared to touch the ball now, in my opinion. I mean, earlier on this season, Jed and myself weren't right confident in Jermaine Asako at fullback. I've seen him, I've always thought he were a really good winger, and he kind of fell into the category of Valentine Holmes as kind of pushing himself into that fullback slot, I thought, maybe wanting bigger money, wanting bigger moments. But, you know, I'll happily sit down and say I was wrong more recently, because similar to Valentine Holmes, his form has picked up. You know, he took total control of that attacking side of Brisbane, especially in the first half, coming into the second half. So much confidence in attack. He got 20 points overall in the 80 minutes he played. He got 137 run metres, 2 try assists. And in a game where, you know, rugby league these days, the fullback is the most influential player, if I'm honest, maybe along with the hooker. But Isaka was proving that the transfer of Reece Walsh out of Brisbane is probably a smart one, because it would have been difficult to break Isaka's form at the minute. Every player in that back line for Brisbane scored a try, and Jermaine Asako had a hand in every single one of them as well, which is no mean feat. Very well played to him. I really like Tyson Gamble. He's a Tigers product. He's played for Tigers before, so it's great to see another Tigers product playing well for another club. I felt he showed his inner Michael Ennis, and that's what Brisbane really need. He was, you know, we've all played rugby. You all need them type of players with a bit of grunt in them and just winding players up left, right and centre. And Brisbane need that. They're a good side. They're a quality side when they want to be, but they're soft, you know, and they let teams roll over them. And Tyson Gamble was, he had this much passion and swagger on the field, I felt. And it's exactly what Brisbane need. I think he would suit playing with Tom Dearden a lot better. Gamble played very direct, and fair enough, if Anthony Milford played like he could do every single week, it would suit, but I just don't think Milford's up to it at the minute, and will probably suit playing lower grade or coming to Super League at the back end of the year. But I'm not sure Brisbane are going to give Dearden a chance now he's picked to go up to the Cowboys. Thought David Fifita was neutralised really, really well by Brisbane. If there was one club that was going to do it, it was going to be Brisbane. They know his game exactly to a T. Tevita Pengai Jr. was on top of him all game, didn't give him a chance to breathe. He ended up making 2 errors and conceding a penalty as well, so he was really off his game. He only made 4 runs in the first half, which to me is pretty unspeakable from a player of his standard, especially in the first 20 minutes when the Titans were all over him. You'd think he'd want him to touch the ball. Don't know if he's carrying an injury, don't know if he's a bit down on confidence, you're not entirely sure, but that's unspeakable really for me. The quality's there for Brisbane. It's just been more of a sense of them making the effort and making it count and playing for each other. It's almost the exact opposite for a team like the Bulldogs, who don't really have quality, but they've constantly got the effort. Performances like this will go a long way and show their fan base that they can topple the better teams. And for the players on their roster, they should be playing better. 94% completion is really impressive for Titans, but poor decisions in the second half really cost them as well. Only one player from their interchange played more than 40 minutes, and they seem to be relying heavily on their starting 13 week in, week out. And it can really work against you if your plan A isn't working, or if it is working early on in the game, Brisbane change, and then you've got no plan B. Something we've mentioned in the past, and I know, Jed, you're big on having a big mobile bench. You know, Jermaine Jolliffe, Herman Asiasse, Sam McIntyre and Bo Fermor, they're all good, solid players, but they're not really going to give you anything extra off the bench. And especially if you're needing to change the game, it's not really working for them. Jed, I'll shoot this over to you, mate. Jermaine Asako, you know, he's been playing really well this past couple of weeks. He's 24. He's coming into his prime now. There's been talk this week about, or in the past couple of weeks, to be fair, Brisbane going out and potentially buying a whole new spine for next year. You know, is there any need to shop out for a fullback anymore? Have you got your stable fullback in Jermaine Asako?
I think you have, yeah. And it's not only the stability. I feel like he's got the passion for the club is there as well. When he scored, because he was at fault for 2 of the tries they conceded along, his defensive positioning, he was nowhere near the ball, and it was looked simple for the Titans. And I feel like he had that little spark in him, which like this is. It seemed like he went, "This is my team. I'm not happy with this. I'm not playing well, and I'm going to do something about it." And he did. And he, at the start of it, pretty much single-handedly dragged them to be back into it. And then everybody started firing off the back of him, as you mentioned, Jamie. I'd keep him. I totally agree, though. I think they're definitely, depending obviously how Tyson Gamble goes, I don't know whether he might play out long term, but they do need in the moment a new spine. And I mean, it's Turpin at dummy half at the moment, isn't it, at the Broncos?
Yeah.
I've been impressed with Turpin. I think his delivery is really good. I don't think he's one of the best uckers in the world, or I'm not making him out to be, but if you've got a decent spine around him, that might make him a bit better. But I think 6 and 7 would be a priority for me. But I think I'd stick with Turpin at 9 because I have been impressed with him, and I'd stick with a star cut fullback, Jamie.
Fair points, mate. Very fair points. Very quickly, Woody, like I said, Ash Taylor kind of falls into that same category as Anthony Milford sometimes. He's been a bit of a passenger in the game. How long do you give him? Because obviously Jamal Fogarty is obviously getting a bit frustrated with the aspect of not really having a partner to link up with. Do you put him back in second grade for a couple of weeks? Do you bring someone else in just to give him a bit of a chance? You know, Tanner Boyd is a good prospect as well. What do you do with someone like Ash Taylor?
I'd have to double down on what you said earlier and agree that he's definitely played himself out of a contract. So I think at the minute I'd probably rotate him out if possible. I know if he is to be offered a deal, it's unlikely it'll have to be a massive price cut as well. He nowhere near justifies that massive salary he's on. You know, for a team that wants to be progressing and aiming for the top eight, he's just not a good fit there. It's been a rocky stay throughout for him, hasn't it, over the 5 years or whatever. He's over 100 games in, and there's still so many questions about whether he even warrants a place in the side, which kind of says it all, really. These same questions come up year after year and week after week, really.
Definitely, man. Like, blows my mind. He's on $1 million as well, which is crazy, crazy money for a player who's nowhere near that form at the minute. Very quickly, quite a devastating blow for a Gold Coast Titans. Corey Thompson is another syndesmotic ankle sprain. Unbelievable amount of them at the minute. He's looking at another 8 weeks on the sideline, so 2 months without Corey Thompson. And, you know, he was an outside chance of playing for Queensland for me in that State of Origin side, so very unlucky for him. And that attacking threat from the back is going to be a lot less now for Gold Coast Titans. I give Jermaine Asako 5 points. Payne Haas, who ever played, is brilliant player, excellent player, 4 points. AJ Brimson, 3. Tevita Pengai Jr., 2. And Jamal Fogarty, 1. Coming on to the next game, Jed, starting on the Saturday games, Penrith Panthers 28, Manly Warringah Seagulls 16. You took this one and you had a right riot watching this one.
Yeah, it was a really, really good game of rugby league, and it was quite surprising, to be fair. When you look at both how sides have performed in 2021 or even 3 to 4 weeks ago, you'd be having Penrith absolutely running riot over this Manly side. But with Tommy Turbo in it, as we've mentioned the last 2 weeks, Manly are a completely different beast, and he spurs on all the players around them to become better players, much like a Joey Johns did for the Newcastle Knights in their heyday. I'm not saying it's as dramatic as that effect, but that's the influence that he has on that squad. Both teams that were extremely physical, and Manly matched up the Panthers pack, and we spoke about James Fisher-Harris and Moses Leota out, how well they start for the Panthers, but Manly started equally as well and did well not to let them get a take advantage of them and let them get that rolling, as we've seen them do to many sides this season. And Mike Tapau was excellent. Pseka was very good. He was really, really impressive for me, and someone that I've not really paid too much attention to, but I will definitely be doing going forward now, because he was excellent in this game and constantly seemed to run the ball hard and with purpose. And Sean Kepi was also very good. I mean, the Panthers did start really, really well, and something that has become a ritual for them, and it was 10-2 in no time. But Manly were resilient, and as we mentioned 3 to 4 weeks ago, we would have seen them fall apart, but they didn't do it, and they stuck in the game. I mean, it took a little bit of a luck and a little bit of a magic moment with Tommy Turbo getting the interception that brought them back into the contest, with closing in on half time. But usually they would never have been in the ability to do that. The Panthers had a born and way to be 24, 26, 28 nil before they'd even got that chance. So it's a credit to the Manly defence that it allowed them to stay in the game, wait for that little bit. Cause no matter who you are, you're going to get a little bit of luck in the game. But if you get that little bit of luck when the team's already blown you out the water, then that little bit of luck is absolutely meaningless. So credit goes to Manly for weathering the storm when they were getting battered by Penrith and fronting up as much as possible. When they did get that little bit of luck, they were able to get back within touching distance and neutralise Penrith and get back on that level playing field. I mean, but when you are playing the Panthers, as we've mentioned, you are going to need to play for the full 80. But unfortunately, they just did prove to be a little bit too strong towards the back end of the game. But again, another credit to Manly is that this is the most points that Penrith have conceded all season in 16, which shows how impressive Manly must have been. Nathan Cleary is the best number seven in the world. No question about it. I did speak very highly of Hughes, but I did say he's second to Nathan Cleary, but the gap between them two is absolutely huge. Cleary, he leads his team so well around the park. His rugby brain is absolutely second to none. And it's like he sees the game in slow-mo or he can knows what's going to happen three plays before it's actually happened. We've seen the best halfbacks in the world do it. JT did it, Cooper Cronk do it, and Nathan Cleary has got that rugby brain about him to be able to work things out before it's even anywhere near close to happening. I mean, his decision to turn the 20-metre tap into a kick for touch to give themselves a better advantage to saw before half-time, I mean, only a few talents in the world would be able to do it. Not only would be able to do it, but to think about it and execute it as well as he did. I mean, it didn't come off from that time. Stephen Crichton went for the one-pointer and missed. But just to turn that with like 10, 15 seconds from your own 20 to give yourself a realistic opportunity to get some points on the board, it's just excellent. And it's a credit to Nathan Cleary and all his game and how hard he works. Over the 80 minutes, he got 4 conversions, 2 try assists, 2 line break assists, a tackle break, and 456 kick meters. I don't know. I'll just throw it to you two really quickly. Is Nathan Cleary the best player in the world right now?
Yes.
Would he?
Yeah, got to agree.
Yeah, I don't think you can argue against it at the moment. He's just so influential and so good every single week. I mean, at the risk of repeating ourselves for another player, Brian Tor is, for me, I don't know how they could not pick him if he carries on playing this way for the Origin jersey. He was on Matty Johns this week, and both him and Jerome Lewis said that obviously would love to play it at the moment. They're just focusing on Penrith. And if he keeps doing what he's doing, I don't know how he's not going to at least get in the squad. His 7th consecutive game where he's broken 200 metres with 233 run metres overall. And he actually ran 70 metres in the first 10 minutes. I mean, I saw him, he got the ball sort of ducked under one arm and then absolutely put Cherry Evans on his backside and then carried on running, I mean, which was brilliant to see, just see a winger absolutely topping over someone. So, I mean, if he keeps doing what he's doing, he's got to be in for a certainty for the New South Wales squad. But once again, for the Manly, everything absolutely ran through turbo. There's more pressure on him week in, week out now. Playing a top side, but they didn't fall to the mention. Had a gun run out with his interception. His hamstring seemed to be holding up pretty well. I'll touch wood for him because obviously we want talents like him playing the game. We don't want them injured all the time. It was absolutely safe as houses under the eyeball. And as soon as he catches that, the attack starts straight away. And they often saw he had a really quick play of the ball as soon as he caught it and enabled them to get out of their own half really quickly. He did notice that he occasionally switched to wing in defence. I don't know if that's just maybe a precautionary measure, just so he's still easing back in slowly and doesn't want to overstretch and overexert himself too much. But when he contributes as much as he does in attack and under the high ball, I don't think we begrudge him going to the wing to make sure that he stays fit for the upcoming games in the future. I mean, Manly have quietly been building a force in their pack over the 4 weeks. There was talk that Manly's pack was too big for the rule changes that came into the NRL, that they were suffering from fatigue. But the likes of Mighty Tapau, Tania Paseka, Sean Kepi, Ola Kawatatu, I think I butchered that worse than you did last week, Jamie. Josh Alawai, who for me, has very much gone, get the klaxon ready, under the radar in terms of forwards because he has been absolutely exceptional this week. But yeah, Josh Alawai has been excellent and continued to in this game, just a really, really good forward. And so they're just rotationally so strong for them. And then you've got the likes of Schuster and Jake Trbojevic, who have spoke for the wealth, obviously got absolutely excellent hands. Schuster's got a great kicking game, especially close to the line. And it's good to have that extra option that he could go through Turbo, DC4 or Schuster. So many options for him, which make Manly really dangerous close to the line. That Panthers showed how vital their interchange is to Liam Martin, who has fallen out of favour this year. Obviously, Kurt Capewell now starts ahead of him in after he had a really good last season, Liam Martin, but probably had his best game of the season so far. Excellent impact from the bench. Scored a crucial try to get Penrith back on the game and then had a really big hand, literally big hand, in the match-winning play for Crichton score, knocking it back just before it went dead. He cocked 120 run metres from 11 runs, 3 tackle breaks, and as we mentioned, for the Penrith week in, week out, great strength in depth and a credit to them and their system. Woody, with the resurgence of Manly, judging on the bookies odds in Australia, if you add it as a list, Manly are now currently 7th favourite to win the comp. So ideally, that puts them to finish 7th on the ladder. I don't know whether I personally think they will do that, but do you think Manly are capable of making the 8, Woody?
Earlier on in the season, I'd have adamantly said no chance, but I mean, that was before Tommy Turbo was back, and like you've said, like this week and last week, a completely different side with him in. So I think it's kind of centered on him staying fit and firing, and also the form of Daily Cherry Evans. So I'd say they're definitely in that middle bunch in the ladder. So they've got a decent enough chance. The Titans are currently sat in eighth on the same number of wins. So yeah, there's definitely a good chance at it.
I think the benefit for them at this particular moment is that there are so many teams sitting around that 5th to 11th that are all around about 8-6 points, and they're all so inconsistent. You look at the Raiders, who've lost 4 in a row. The Dragons, who were unbeatable 3 weeks ago, now have lost 3 in a row. Manly, who couldn't win to save their lives, have now won, apart from this week, won 2 in a row and probably 3 in a row. So who knows what that bottom of the 8 is going to look like. Jamie, very quickly to you, mate. If there are any, what are the weak points for the Panthers, and can you see them losing this season?
I don't think when they've got the starting 17 out, I genuinely don't think there's any weak points. You've just got to almost kind of, I don't know, I mean, play the way Melbourne did. You just got to try and blow them off the park in the first 20 minutes. We know how strong they are coming out into the first half. The only way I see them losing in the regular season is during the Origin period. We know that they're going to have a litany of players probably called up for both sides. I mean, I won't go through them all, but both halves are probably going to go. You've got Capewell, who's probably going to go. Probably Toho and Crichton as well. Gio probably as well. You know, there's a lot of big players there. But, I mean, they'll just probably put someone like Matt Burton and someone else in the halves as well, who are equally as strong. So, weak points, I don't think there's many at all, which is crazy. But I think if they're going to lose, it's going to be the Origin period in about a month or so time.
Yeah, I probably agree with you there. But that will be a real test of their strength in depth and their character. Kate Capewell is out with a rib injury for 1 to 3 weeks, so we shouldn't keep him sidelined too long. And to round off, my player of the year points this one, Nathan Cleary with 5 points, Tommy Turbo 4, Brian Toto with 3, Liam Martin 2, and Marty Tapau with 1, who it was excellent. And James Fisher-Harris is unlucky not to get in the 5 whenever he doesn't, because he's outstanding every week. No confusion who's got this next game, as it is the Canterbury at Bankstown Bulldogs 10 and Woody's beloved Parramatta Eels 32. Two times on the podcast, 2 wins for the Eels. It seemed like it started really well for you, Woody, and I'll leave it there and pass it over to you.
Yeah, another really good week for me, and like you say, it's been a good start to my life on the pod. It was a pretty similar story to last week's game, really. Eels put on a complete clinic, to be honest, and were very worthy winners. Going into this one, there's always some question marks over this fixture with it being a long-standing rivalry, so it could, you know, throw up the odd upset or a bit of a thriller. But yeah, Hills were in complete control bar probably 10 minutes in the second period, where the Dogs managed a couple of tries between about 40 and 50. Hills scored tries early on in both halves, and simply put, were the better rugby league side for the vast majority of the game, 90% of it. So yeah, so much more threat throughout that Hills side compared to the Doggies. There wasn't an awful lot in possession and completion numbers, really, but for me, it was the average set distance which proved to be the real deciding point. I mean, on average, Parra were making 13.4 metres more from every single set than the Dogs, which, you know, is just ridiculous and tells the story of the game, and I mean, how much they were punching holes up that middle and making metres at will, really. And, you know, against an ever-growing tide defence and with huge attacking threat from throughout, that was really what mattered in the end. I think the main point I want to make from this game is that this is King Guffo's world and we're all just living in it. What a phenomenal rugby league player. I don't know, he's probably upset that I didn't give him any points last week, but I mean, this week he absolutely ran the show. He's the best player on the park by miles. He got a couple of tries, 259 run metres from 22 runs, 11 tackle breaks, 3 line breaks, 1 line break assist and 2 offloads in 72 minutes of play. So got to put his feet up for the last 8 minutes. Alongside him, it's, you know, the same names that pop up every single week for the Eels. You know, Reed, Marnie and Moses were joining the party with Guffo. Marnie came up with so many big plays in attack and defence. And got a big charge down 90 seconds in, made a break leading up to the first try, and I think he's firmly putting himself into Origin contention next month. Moses' kicking game is always so crucial. You know, off the tee and from hand, he had 15 kicks from hand for 441 kicking metres. That really did pin the Dogs back and made a huge difference. Almost feel like reading off an auto cue, but it's the same issues for the Dogs. You know, they're a working pack, but there's just not enough quality to see them make a big impact in attack. Sumo Feige's shot was a sight to behold, and as soon as he came on, he made 3 massive hits. forced a couple of turnovers, and alongside him, the likes of Thompson, Waddell and Atoni all running for 100 metres is impressive. There's four dummy half runs between Katoa and Dates, which is a massive issue and kind of shows how much they're not taking the line on. And I think to have a rotation option off the bench at hooker, they need a bit more variety in there. Not just someone who's going to kind of pass along and go through the phases when they've got a static number six like Avaria. And for the second week running, Bulldogs had a really quick, a really exceptional quick average play of the ball speed of 3.17 seconds overall, which was a bit of a way quicker than the Eels. And that's something they've obviously been working on with four blokes coming in at under 3 seconds. And same as last week, another shout out to Bryce Cartwright, who's kind of finding his niche coming off that bench and working the second, third receiver role. I think it's kind of working really well for him, keeping it simple. And despite his kind of off-field problems, when he's on point, which he has been the last few weeks, he's a really good link-up player. Had 44 minutes this week, and in that time he had 3 tackle breaks, 22 tackles, line break assist, got his hands on the ball 11 times in 44 minutes. You know, he's said he had 22 attacking sets for argument's sake, so he's getting his hands on the ball every other set, which is proving how much Brad Arthur trusts him with the ball in hand. So hopefully he can kind of continue that vein of form. I think that'd be a pretty big achievement if we kind of got Bryce Cartwright playing that crucially every week. At the risk of sounding obsessed with him, but I want to know what you two think about how close King Guffo is to potentially breaking into that very congested and contested New South Wales number one jersey, you know, if everyone is fit. Jed, do you fancy picking up that one?
I feel like it's so unfortunate because he's playing in the position that has the highest amount of world-class players in it. I mean, if you're saying Tommy Turbo is fully fit, people could say it'd be hard to argue against that. Guffo's the fourth best fullback for New South Wales with your likes of, you've got Teddy and Pappenhausen, Tommy Turbo, and then him. And I don't think there's anything that he can do to break into that side. It's just the way it is, unfortunately, at the moment. And if you had the top 15 players in the world, Guffo's in that top 15 for me easily. Is that impressive? But then, unfortunately, you've got three other fullbacks who are just a little bit better than him. So it's just really unfortunate that the time that he's playing at the peak of his performance, it's just there's so much depth in that fullback position, especially for New South Wales. I don't know what else can do. For me, though, Reid Marnie should definitely get into that squad. I don't know whether they're going to rotate with Harry Grant, who you would think would be the incumbent there. But I love Reid Marnie. I think he's a great player. And they're both 80-minute hookers, but whether you can both have them for Queensland to work to an advantage, I don't know. I feel like they could work well, but I don't know. What do you think, Jamie?
In my lifetime, I don't think there's ever been so much world-class depth in one position for a representative side. Like you said, you've got Tedesco, who's probably, it's his shirt to lose. You've got Tom Trbojevic, you've got Ryan Pappenhausen, and then you've got Clint Gutherson. And I'm sure there's probably even a couple other names that I can't think of the top of my head as well. Absolutely unbelievable depth. And Freddie Fittler, unless all four get injured, is going to have a very easy choice there as well. But I'm sorry to say, Woody, he still wouldn't be my number one pick. I think I'd have Tedesco fullback, Pappenhausen coming off the bench, and probably Tom Trbojevic either in the centre. I wasn't massively impressed with Gutherson last year in the Origin, and I thought he was quite weak in defence in the centre position. I don't think he fits in on the wing either. He will probably get picked in the squad, I imagine, but he don't make it for me. I'm sorry, mate.
No worries, mate. Take it on the chin and move on. Yes, looking at the doggies then, after a bit of promise last week that kind of sitting rock bottom, so do you think it is possible for them to avoid the spoon this year, or is that kind of looking like an inevitability?
It's theirs to lose, isn't it? I think they're the worst team in the NRL this year. I think the only team that's going to beat them to it is us, if I'm honest, at the Tigers. I think Brisbane have too much quality, and I think they will pick up more wins than last year. Cowboys look a lot stronger this year. Manly are well above it now. I thought the Dragons would early on this year, but I think they've got enough quality. I think it's between the Tigers and the Bulldogs. And it's going to depend on, once again, not a cop-out answer, but around the Origin period. I'm not sure if maybe Kotrick maybe get called up for New South Wales, but between us and the Bulldogs, not many are going to get called up. So it's between two, but it's going to be, I think we've probably got a little bit more quality, but you know, they beat the Bunnies last year in the last two games of the year just to save themselves. So you never know, mate. You never know. Just in this game for you boys, it looks like Nathan Brown might be up for about two to four weeks out with a hip knock. And like you've mentioned, mate, that the points say it themselves. King Gutho, 5. Reid Marnie, 4. Isaiah Papali'i, 3. Mike Acebo, 2. And Mitchell Moses, 1. I'm sure you could give them 5 points every single week. They are 5 extraordinary players. And, you know, off the record here, I love Melbourne and I love Roos and I love what they do for development and retention, but I would love a Penrith Parramatta Grand Final. I think it'd be brilliant. I mean, I wouldn't care who won it. Two brilliant clubs, two semi-traditional clubs, and I'm really glad that they're both going really well at the minute as well. But like I said, mentioning that side, Sydney Roosters 38, Newcastle Knights 4, pure dominance from start to finish from the Roosters. I'm unsure how they keep putting on performances like this, really, with such a depleted side. I mean, the players that are out injured, additionally with the players that are still not 100% back from their injuries from last year, is absolutely extraordinary. I've just got a bit of a list here. You've got Boyd Cordner, Luke Carey, Adam Kieran, who actually made his comeback in the reserve grade this week, Lachlan Lamb, Freddie Lussick, Billy Smith, James Tedesco, Jake Friends, obviously had a career-ending injury, Brett Morris, who looks like he's just had a career-ending injury, Lindsay Collins, who's just had a season-ending injury, and Victor Radley and Sam Berrills are still a bit rusty as well, coming back from their respective ACLs. I mean, every club's going to get an injury worry every single year. That's rugby league for you. But my God, it's absolutely ridiculous what's happening at the Roosters. But alternatively, you know, Newcastle have had a few injuries here and there, but they've just got absolute no enthusiasm. Every time I've watched them this year, they've either been a brilliant side or an embarrassing side, really. And it can become a real danger, kind of a lack of enthusiasm, because that can lead to a lack of effort very, very quickly. You've seen that from the Broncos. You've seen that from the Tigers. And once again, like I said, there are another team struggling with big injuries to big players, but that excuse goes out the window when you're losing by 34 points to a side who has equally as many injuries. And you can't keep relying on Caelan Palmer every week. You know, if you want a chance of getting the top eight, I mean, that first ball to Braden Musgrove were absolutely beautiful, and for his first try ever. They completed 83%, did the Newcastle Knights, exactly the same as the Roosters, but lost out on all 7 attacking stats in this game. The Roosters had more runs, more run meters, more post-contact meters, more line breaks, more tackle breaks, more average set distances, and more kick return meters as well. Just killed them in every aspect of the attacking game, which basically won them the game. Much the same as what you mentioned, Jed, with Brian Toto, I'm at danger of becoming a bit of a broken record here on this podcast in regards to this player, but blooming heck, how good is Sam Walker? I'm struggling to think of someone who's made their first grade debut in my lifetime of watching it, who's got such a world of potential, but not only seemed to have met that potential so soon in his career, but he's actually exceeding it. Caelan Palmer comes to mind, but I feel as though sometimes he has peaks and troughs, but Sam Walker seems to be getting better every single week. Not only that, he's actually leading a side who's out with so many injuries and playing so, so well. It's quite simply, if he's not playing at the minute, then the Roosters don't win, in my opinion. That's how good he is. Depending on the statistics that you read, either in this game he got 4 or 5 try assists. I know some areas have reported it differently. Let's say it's 5 try assists for argument's sake. If it is 5 try, it's actually a record for a Roosters player since records began. No Roosters player has ever got 5 try assists in one game. He also got a try himself, 5 conversions, 3 tackle breaks, 1 line break and 2 line break assists. He's actually got 12 try assists in 5 games since making his debut a couple of weeks ago. The record in a season is 40 by Tim Smith, who also won Rookie of the Year that year. You know, going off the back of that, if he doesn't get called up for a surprise origin appearance, he's en route to breaking that. And not only potentially winning Rookie of the Year, but could easily sneak in and become Dalian Player of the Year as well. Something that nobody has ever done is win the Dalian Player of the Year and Rookie Player of the Year in the same season. Alternatively, Blake Green, for me, is really struggling for Newcastle. He's a player that has always stood out, whether he's playing over here in Super League or playing in the NRL. You know, whenever he plays, the team that he plays for always seems to do well. He's a metronome. You know, I mentioned it a couple of times. Everything he touches is for a reason. Everything he does is purposeful. but he can't seem to keep up with play. You know, he came back from his ACL injury 6.5 to 7 months in, purely because, you know, the Newcastle Knights were struggling with players, but it looks like he's really struggling now. And I think playing with a half-back partner in Kurt Mann's just not working for him. I wouldn't be surprised if Phoenix Crosland comes in for either one of them men, whether they give Green a week off or Kurt Mann kind of moves to the number 14 role that we're used to him as well. Yeah, he's really, really struggling with Blake Green. I mean, Blum, once again, Angus Crichton is a shoo-in for Origin, to be fair. He's probably the first back row you put in for New South Wales and probably Australia come the World Cup as well. But this form he's on is extraordinary. You know, he's so understated in the way he goes about things. He got another try in this game, 154 run meters, 4 tackle breaks and 3 offloads. And very, very, I mean, it's open to discussion, lads, but for me, he's probably the most on-form second rower in the world at the minute. He's exceptional. I think he's been playing very, very well. Just a quick mention as well, Pasami Saulo for Newcastle actually got the best run percentage in the NRL this year. Especially, that's brilliant for a rookie. In 16 minutes, he's on the field. He ran the ball 9 times. And, you know, for argument's sake, let's say of that 16 minutes, they only had 8 minutes of attacking play. So in 8 minutes, he's ran the ball 9 times, which is extraordinary. Absolutely fair play to him. Got 67 metres on top of that as well. Big, big, heavy grafter in. Fair play. You know, the Knights have got Canberra Raiders, West Tigers and North Queensland Cowboys in the next 3 games. 3 very winnable games there. You know how off form Canberra can be. And, you know, up and down the Tigers and the Cowboys can be as well. You know, if them 3 games are going to determine their season for me, and it's going to be up in the air for them. You know, Jed, everybody saw it. Lindsay Collins is out for the season with an ACL confirmation, and Brett Morris has also had his ACL confirmed as well. There were talks earlier, a couple of weeks ago, actually, that the Morris twins were either going to re-sign with the Roosters or go to another club. Apparently, Brett Morris has said in the change room after the game that he was so pleased to have captained the Roosters on his final ever game in his career. For you, mate, I mean, Blumek, coming back from an ACL is very, very difficult, never mind for a 35-year-old. But if he comes back and he seems as though he's fighting fit, do you think he can go another year?
I think he can. I think he's got the mental toughness for it, without a shadow of a doubt. And I think that, as we know, with ACLs, speaking to numerous players, after the battle is the mental battle with it, just thinking, can I do this? I mean, he's absolutely killed it this year. To be an outside back in the NRL at 35 years old and be killing it shows how special of a player you are. There's no doubt in my mind that he couldn't go again next season. It's whether he wants to. I know him and Josh have both spoke about wanting to take coaching as a duo. Whether they think that maybe now that might be the right time. I think he could go another season, but I think he will hang up his boots now just because of how much it takes to come back from an ACL. And I feel like he's achieved everything in his career that he could possibly have wanted to. And at the moment now, it's more of like his swan song. What he's doing at the Roosters, there's nothing left to prove and just really enjoying it. So I feel like he'll be happy to bow out this way, in my opinion, Jeremy.
What a player as well. Probably the best winger in my lifetime. 4th highest try scorer in NRL history. State of Origin, Grand Finals, absolutely fair play to him. My player of the year, points for this one, Sam Walker, the wonder kid, 5 points. Josh Morris, 4 points. He got a hat-trick in this game. Joey Manu at fullback, 3 points. Brett Morris, 2 points. And Angus Crichton, 1 point. Jed, buddy, it's a bit of a turn of fortunes for you this week. You're a bit more solemn, and there's no doubt why. New Zealand Warriors, 24. North Queensland Cowboys, 20.
I think it's more so because I know what game's going to follow this as well. So after I finish this one, I might just turn it off and go to sleep. But yeah, it was almost a repeat of last week, but unfortunately Lightning did not strike twice for the Cowboys as the Warriors held on to take the 2 points. And to be honest, Cowboys were lucky to be within 4 points because the Warriors were absolutely better in every single aspect of the game and they definitely deserve to win that, even though some of the stats may say differently. I mean, Cowboys actually had more runs, more run meters and more possession, better completion. But as I mentioned, if you were listening to probably round 1 to 4 of the NRL, my main gripe with the Cowboys is that we had absolutely zero spark in attack and no creativity. And it were almost as if we'd gone back to that in a way. I mean, also a testament to the Warriors' defence, it was exceptional. And they only actually had 11 missed tackles in the whole game, which is a real testament to their side, especially with a few bodies missing in recent weeks too. Seven forwards for the Warriors had 100% tackle efficiency, which is incredible to have so many blokes willing to do all the little things right and make sure that they make every single tackle. And it's so hard to do, especially in the middle of the park with how fast and quick flowing the NRL is. So fair play to them. But the Warriors went 18-0 up pretty quickly, and all three tries were through poor defensive reads by the Cowboys. Players shooting up out of the line when they didn't need to, and just general laziness with contact. I think, like, the fair play to the Warriors, they took advantage of them defensive reads and the laziness. And a lot of, I think two of them were scored from, if not past the 50-metre mark, then past the 40-metre mark. They were quite long-range tries, and a fair play to them for playing off the back of it really well and making the tries look really nice. But when you've got to take advantage of what's in front of you, and they really did that. I mean, this week was the Warriors' fourth halves partnership in 8 weeks, and I mentioned it in my NRL preview that it could start to cause real issues. In terms of getting regular structure and consistency, that's nowhere near as important as any other position as your halfbacks. You think about other positions that play, you've sort of got your prop forwards or your second rows or your winger and your centres, but nowhere is it as important as it is in your halfbacks, who need to be in sync with absolutely everything you do. You think of great teams, you think of great halfback combinations and great halfback partnerships, and when you're having to switch it week in, week out, you're doing your team a disservice by not allowing that partnership to grow naturally. But they proved in this game that they've still got the talent there. Because it didn't actually seem the case. Cody Nikorima continued his strong start to the season by partnering Reece Walsh, who played his first ever NRL game at six, along with RTS at the back, who is just absolutely incredible week in, week out. All three interlinked beautifully and were heavily involved in every single key play for the Warriors. Nikorima, who's been told that he needs to go back to his running game a little bit more, and he did that. He threatened the line every single time that he looked it, so it was nice to see him sort of revert that to a little bit. Managed to try three conversions, 117 run meters, three tackle breaks, one line break and two line break assists, attacked the line really well. Rodgers is just Rodgers, and obviously every NRL round that goes by, I'm a little bit sadder that he's not going to be here next year, and it's one game less we're going to get to see him in the NRL, and he's absolutely devastating blow for the sport as a whole. 224 run meters and eight tackle busts, and Reece Walsh, another talent from Brisbane, a mature head who doesn't seem to overcomplicate things. He's been getting a lot of hype in the media this week about how quickly he's adjusted to the NRL, kind of like a duck to the water, similar to how Sam Walker adjusted straight away when he came into the Roosters team. As I mentioned a bit ago, not much spark from the Cowboys at all. I mean, fair play that we still actually managed four tries, which is a credit to his attack, even though it was pretty much non-existent in part. But if we'd have played like this, similar like 4 or 5 weeks ago, we wouldn't have scored a point. So there is still signs of improvement there. We managed to stay in the game, which is a credit to them, because you always say good teams find a way to win when they're not playing well. And although we didn't win, we did well to be in with such 4 points when Warriors were so dominant really throughout the game. Scott Drinkwater was off form today in his kicking game. His kicking game was really poor. It's the first time I've actually seen that from him. Val Holmes had a go, as he does absolutely every week, and so did Murray Tuilagi. He got a brace of tries, and he's really impressed me. Coming in, has been one of the bright sparks of players to make the debut this season for the Cowboys, and I've been really impressed, and he seems to be going from strength to strength. Tamalola had a slow return to the side. I don't think that's anything to worry about personally. He got around about 130 metres, I think. No tackle breaks. 100% tackle efficiency, but only 45 minutes. So hopefully it's just easing him back in slowly. Only two players for the Cowboys have managed to play this ball speed average under 3.5 seconds, which is far too slow, really lethargic. And it showed that the Warriors were putting a huge emphasis on defence. Links perfectly with 11 missed tackles if you're laying on them, not allowing the Cowboys to get a quick play of the ball. You've got more energy, you're more ready for the next set that's coming, which is why they weren't making any missed tackles. Six penalties conceded by the Cowboys, and it caught up to us in the end. I'm not too disheartened or dispeak that there was a few moments of bright sparks, but I'm happy that in a game where the other side were so dominant that we managed to keep the scoreline as minimal as possible. Woody, I'm going to come to you. Obviously, Tom Dearden's confirmed for the Cowboys. Chad Townsend's confirmed for the Cowboys, although he's playing really poorly at the moment. And we've got Scott Drinkwater and Val Holmes. You've got a fullback, standoff, and a scrum half. Four doesn't go into three. If you're the Cowboys manager, what are you doing? If you're Todd Payton, what are you doing with these players who misses out?
I think, firstly, it centres on what decision Drinkwater makes and where he's going to accept a contract. And it's been said that he's a priority, but also in the time that talks have been stalling, Townsend did and have been recruited. If they do go into next season with all four, and I don't know if they will be able to keep all four into the starting lineup, but potentially Drinkwater maybe goes to fullback and Valentine shifts to the wing. But you know, given how well Holmes have been playing at fullback recently, I don't think that's probably the ideal scenario, and you don't want him shifting back out there again.
No, no, I totally agree. And it's hard because if you're asking this question like 4 or 5 weeks ago, you're thinking, yeah, Drinkwater at fullback, Holmes on the wing, and obviously them in the halves. But now Holmes is playing so well at fullback, it's a difficult situation. But maybe as the season goes on, we'll get a clear answer. Very quickly over to you, Jamie. Coenessa's challenge on Reece Walsh, is it nasty or is it just enough part of the game that looked worse than it was?
Yeah, it were a fraction too late for me. I think the players like Reece Walsh, Sam Walker, the smaller, younger halves who are coming through at the minute are going to have to be protected a bit more by the referees. Hess knew what he was doing. Walsh got away a great kick in it, and it was probably about a second and a half late for me. I think he got put on report. I'm yet to see if he's been charged. Probably don't deserve a banning or anything, but definitely a fine. And he knew what he was doing was Hess. Definitely knew what he was doing.
Yeah, he did know what he was doing, but I think, personally, in my opinion, I might be biased. I think on report was probably just a decision and no further action needed. To round off my points, Cody Nikarima 5, RTS 4, and Reece Walsh 3. All three of them could have genuinely come in any position. It was really hard to differentiate between them. So Harris was excellent too, and Adam Pompey, who probably had one of his best games of his career, was excellent, really elusive, and got a brace of tries from the centre position with 1 point. And finally, St. George of the Dragons 8, West Tigers 16. To you, Jamie.
Would you look at that, eh? Yeah, like you said, St. George Illawarra Dragons 8, West Tigers 16. Really good to see the boys playing for Maguire and playing for themselves and playing for each other as well. You know, Maguire gave a really emotional pre-game interview as well before that. There's been all this rubbish in the press that the board aren't backing him anymore and the players aren't bothered about him. Total garbage, for my opinion. Maguire isn't the issue at this club. It's a selection of players. It's a CEO. It's the recruitment over the years and it's the development. Michael Maguire has won a grand final in Super League, has won a grand final in the NRL. He's a top, top coach. He's coached New Zealand at the international level. We need to hold on to him, definitely. But yeah, really good performance from us and probably our second best performance this year behind the Bunnies' Golden Point loss as well. Dragons, though, just seem to be suffering with consistency a bit recently. 12 errors in this game and not as much fluidity in the back line. And as they showed in early parts of the year, Zach Lomax's injury in his thumb, I think he dislocated it and has got a small fracture, will really, really affect them going forward, especially the conversion kicking. Looks to be out for about 8 weeks as well, could be a bit longer. And Matt Duffy ain't getting his hands on the ball nearly as much as he was in the first early half of the season. And I've been saying it in the past weeks, and I'll keep hammering it home until the stats say otherwise, but the Dragons forwards aren't working hard enough for Andrew McCullough and for the halfbacks, and it's why Corey Norman and Ben Hunt's form's gone a bit down as well. For the third week in a row, Paul Vaughan and Josh Maguire have broke 100 metres and not a single other Dragons player has cracked 100 metres. Josh Kerr, Blake Laurie, Tarek Sims, Tyrrell Fumayono, Daniel Alvaro, Billy Burns, Cade Ellis, all way below 100, and I think two of them got below 50 as well. Unacceptable. Tarek Sims, 66 metres, which isn't unlike him. He's usually a bit of a hard grafter. Ben Hunt looked a bit rusty, obviously. He's just returned from that fractured leg. Corey Norman was a bit off form. Andrew McCullough constantly works his backside off, 54 tackles and around about that number every single week. He's not going to have the energy to perform an attack. And we know he's never really been much of an attacking force anyway. He's very much a dictator out of dummy half. For us, the same two names every single week, probably the only two players who've performed every single week as well, Dane Laurie, and Adam Dewey, superb once again. Joint best players for us in 2021, especially. I mean, Adam Dewey for us is comfortably our number six now. I've got no issues at all. He's probably one of the first names on the team sheet. I absolutely love his kicking game. It's basically just belting the ball up as high in the air and as far in the air as you can and hoping that the defenders drop it. And I think it's becoming a bit of a tactic now and a bit of a talking point in commentary. And the opposition are getting scared of these kicks because they're going above the ground. And you even saw a couple of weeks ago the likes of Blake Ferguson and Clint Gutherson knocking on as well. So they're evidently working. Dane Laurie, just what a workhorse, especially in a rookie season as well. Another Panthers product. We know how important he is. 173 run metres from 19 runs, 2 try assists, 8 tackle breaks, 2 line breaks and 3 line break assists. talking of Penrith Panthers products, we have got another one in our ranks, Zach Sini, who made his debut in this game. Woody picked him in his team of the week. He impressed him that much. He's the sixth player from the 2018 SG Ball Panthers side, the winning grand final side, actually, to make his NRL debut. Might not sound that impressive, 6 from 17, but within a three-year barrier, and to say, you know, youth players don't always go on to make their NRL debut, that's some stat, is that, and fair play. And I'm sure there's a couple more that's going to trickle through as well. It's always great to see the younger boys coming through for the Tigers, because, you know, there's a lot of hungry lads at the Tigers. And our reserve grade, the Western Suburb Magpies, are actually second in the ladder at the minute. They won 5 out of 6, only behind Penrith Panthers, who are a shock, who are undefeated in the under-20s competition as well. The likes of Zach Sini, Jake Simpkin, who performed once again, Alex Safarth, who works his backside off, Tom McKayley and Luke Garner will run their blood to water when given the chance. And me personally, I'd much rather have them lads on the field than someone like James Roberts or BJ Leilua or any of their merry men, who seem to be only there for a bit of a paycheck, really. They might be trying hard, but it don't look like they are. I'm glad Michael Maguire has kindly managed to switch Alex Twal to prop. He's been okay at 13, but he don't really have the tackle-breaking ability to be a running 13, in my opinion. You know, even though I'm not really set on Big Joe offering Gary playing in the lock position long-term, it's a better option for us at the minute, and I think it works, allows some good rotation. Very poor passing from the Tigers overall, in my opinion. I've been impressed with Jake Simpkin over the past weeks, but we had a lot of forward passes go against us, and a couple came from Jake Simpkin. He'll really need to tune that up in the next couple of weeks. Really frustrating, and, you know, against the better sides, that'll absolutely kill us. You know, there was a funny stat that I read online. Everywhere Josh Maguire has played this year, I don't think he's won a game. Every game he played for Cowboys, he lost. Then he transferred to the Dragons, and they've lost every single game as well. But these Dragons forwards really need to shake it up. He is evidently working hard. He's always been a hard-working forward. Paul Vaughan, exactly the same. They really need to wake up in that regard as well. And in my opinion, I want the Tigers youngsters to be given a chance. If Roberts gets back fit, I don't want him in the side anymore, if I'm honest. I think it's costing us too much. Zach Lomax, like I said, dislocated thumb, bit of a fracture in there, looking at about 6 to 8 weeks on the sideline. Cody Ramsey's fractured his ribs. He could be out for a month. And Braden Willey-Armit as well, calf injury. He is out for about a couple of weeks. Adam Dewey, 5 points. Dane Laurie, 4 points. Zach Sini, 3 points. Luke Brooks, 2 points. He had another 2 try assists. Really, really good. And Josh Maguire, 1 point. Over to you, Jed, if you've just got something quick to say.
Just obviously touching on Adam Dewey, has been very impressive. I know I was quite a big advocate of him before, and I'm glad to see him doing really well. Not really a discussion or anything, just an interesting pondering is that if Mitchell Moses doesn't get picked for Australia, very likely the halves combination for Lebanon will be Adam Dewey and Mitchell Moses, which is a very frightening fact for the other teams who could come up against them, because that's a very handy combination to have in the house for them at the World Cup at the end of the year.
Very much so. And I believe, is Josh Mansour eligible as well for Liverpool?
Yeah, and Alex Twal. So they've got some good players amongst the squad.
Definitely. And I'm sure there's another couple of players as well, because there's a lot of Lebanon contingency in the NRL now, off the top of my head, but it's something we can definitely research and have a look at that in the future. Very, very interesting. Very quickly, lads, it's something you'll preview on Instagram like you do every single week, Jed. We love that aspect of it. But next week, round 9 of the NRL, Thursday night game, shock, it's a blockbuster once again. South Sydney Bunnies up against the Melbourne Storm. The Friday games, Penrith Panthers up against the Cronulla Sutherland Sharks. Parramatta Reels up against the Sydney Roosters, which will be a class game. Canberra Raiders up against the Newcastle Knights. West Tigers up against the Gold Coast Titans, which will be, you know, we'll be looking for that for a win there up at Campbelltown. Another Queensland derby, it seems to win every single week. The North Queensland Cowboys up against the Brisbane Broncos. Manly Seagulls against the New Zealand Warriors. And St George Illawarra Dragons rounding off the weekend against Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs. Very quickly, lads, we're running out of time here. But Super League round 5, Wigan Warriors 16, Hull FC 14, Leeds Centurions 12, St Helens 22, Wakefield Trinity 18, Catalan Dragons 38. Salford Red Devils 18, Casper Tigers 28, Warrington Wolves 50, Hull KR 26, and Huddersfield Giants 14, Leeds Rhinos 13. Woody, what stood out for you this week, mate? Anything catch your eye?
There's nothing that surprised me in terms of results, given that me and you, Jamie, got a full house on the predictions this week.
Mashed it, mate.
I think it'd probably be remiss of us not to mention the Tony Club and Andre Savelio incident in the Wigan Hull game, which kind of pales the result into insignificance, really. So if anyone's not seen, club's been charged for an alleged racial slur against civilian, which I won't repeat, obviously, but you know, it's a really unsavoury incident which kind of needs to be highlighted. It's completely unacceptable. And I know, Jamie, you made a bit of a statement about it on Twitter, which got a bit of feedback as well.
Yes, it did. I did say it for that reason, but for me, there's no ifs or buts or did he. You know, Savelio won't lie. He's got no reason to lie. We're not a game of, you know, liars or pedants or anything like that. He's obviously said it. Let's kick him out of the game. Let's actually prove that we're against racism and let's corner it off there. And Tony Club, I don't think you're part of rugby league anymore, in my opinion. Jed, anything catch your eye if it's in regards to the Tony Club incident or anything around round five?
No, just what I was going to say. I've actually not seen any of this weekend's game due to the social media blackout that all clubs have participated in. And I feel like it's an unfortunate coincidence of the racist mark from Tony Club that has happened during this round when the clubs have had a blackout from all social media due to the prolonged racial abuse from all aspects of all sports. So really sad that it's happened. It needs to be kicked out, obviously. Speak for us all when we're vehemently against all forms of racism, and it's not something that we want in life, let alone sport. So hopefully I second your sentiment there, Jamie, and hopefully it can be moved on and a statement can be made from this incident.
Definitely agree, lads. Fair play to Huddersfield. Good win for them. First win of the season as well. It's always lovely to see Leeds lose. And Greg Inglis bagging a try on debut, which was lovely. And I did manage to catch the Wakefield game. It looked like a bit of a pasting, but we did put in some good efforts there as well. Fair play. But like you said, Woody, me and you smashing the predictions this week, and I should really join a betting company, I think. And that's twice in 5 weeks I've done that with Super League, so I need to put a tenner on here or there. Thank you, everybody that has listened to episode 69, nice, of the Three Blokes and a Rugby League podcast. Head on over to our social media pages where you'll find a variety of content which will hopefully pique your interest. Also, give us a rating on our podcasting platforms if possible, please. We are available on all podcasting platforms. Keep an eye out for future podcasts and interviews, or have a listen to our archive of Tom Johnston, Barry McDermott, Adrian Morley, and many, many more. Have a listen to our recent interview talking of Huddersfield Giants there, superstar Aidan Caesar. We released that on Friday. And coming up this Thursday, we have a topic of the week with myself, Jed and Woody covering the potential NRL conference system. Thank you very much for your patience and listening to us, and we will all catch you down the road.